Beautiful, ladies. Thank you. So, good morning. It's a great pleasure to be here with you again today. And in recognition of Stephen's very overly generous introduction of me, there are petitions out with the coffee. You can sign for my sainthood, please, if you will. You notice that I'm wearing a tie. It's not something I do often. This is a nod to convention, not a bow. You will notice the rest of the outfit is a fishing outfit. I want you to notice the tie. Some of you will recognize it. This is from the Women's Cooperative in San Juan on the lake where San Lucas Toliman is. Hi, Terry. And this tie was picked as cotton by the women who worked there. It was turned into thread by those women. It was dyed with vegetable dyes. You actually get to see this when you're there. That's one of the reasons you should come. Come down and visit with us and go and see that process. And so I couldn't resist buying this tie. I bought it a few weeks ago when there was a group there because I knew sometimes I need one. And I thought it would go fine with a fishing outfit. And one young woman who was with me said, "The tie is beautiful and just a little bit scandalous." And I said, "Then I'll have it because it's scandalous, you know, because it does not recognize tradition." Well, the scripture this morning that I'm going to speak from comes from 1 Peter, where Peter says to us, "Come yourselves like living stones and be built into the temple of God." That's a very special invitation to us. And as we talk about building walls of welcome, well, you already know where that's coming from, as opposed to walls of exclusion. And I'm not going to drag politics in here, but it is important that you realize that we stand at the intersection of faith and politics. And we need to hear what our hearts are saying to us about the kinds of walls that we should be building. Enough of that. I want to share with you three stories that I hope are like parables for you this morning. One is of a lady that many of you know because you helped build her house and you visited her. Her name is Teresa, and she lives just outside of San Lucas Toliman. And several years ago, Stephen was part of that, Judy was part of that, we all were there, and we built that house. Anybody else in here remember being a part of that particular house? Yes, there's some others. And we were building that house, and Teresa was unable to come and do the standard sweat equity with us because her job was working at a feeding station where they fed hungry kids and kids that didn't have families and that sort of thing. But living with Teresa and coming to visit in the afternoons was a little guy named Marcos. Marcos is my Spanish name, so I related to him very well. But he was a little six-year-old boy, and he didn't know our names, never learned our names. That wasn't important to him. The word that was important to him was amigo. And every time he came on the site, didn't matter whether he saw Stephen first, "Amigo!" He'd get down out of Stephen's arms, run to me, "Amigo!" Jenny, whoever was there, Judy, David, anybody that was there, he'd run up to them, "Amigo," and throw himself into your arms and give you a great big hug. And he was a delight. And we learned from Teresa during the week his story. He was not her birth child. He was a little boy who had come as a baby with his parents from El Salvador. His parents were hoping to make the great trek here to the United States. And they got as far as San Lucas Toliman and they got stuck. And so eventually the father was able to make it out of the country, supposedly up here. He's never been heard from since. We have no idea what happened to him. And that left the mother and little Marcos there with Teresa to care for them. And then one day the mother developed a relationship with another man because it happens. You know, there's the husband is not around, it happens. They develop a relationship with someone else. And when she developed that relationship, that man did not want this little boy who wasn't his. The mother eventually attempted the trip here to the United States and died in the desert. This is a known thing. She died in the desert in the attempt. Little Marcos is now left an orphan. He does not know this story. He does not know those people. What he knows and who he knows is Teresa, who reached out and took him as a baby before he would ever have memories of this and raised him. She created the home for him with the warmth and love of her arms. And we had the privilege of building the walls of welcome, the house in which that home would exist for this little boy. It's a powerful story as we think about immigration issues and all of those, but it's, excuse me, also a very powerful example of someone being the building blocks of Christ's church and taking in a young man. Teresa has told us, she said, he'll never know this story. Maybe one day when he's grown, I'll tell him. But now is not the time while he's a child to burden him with the idea that he was abandoned. All that's important now is to let him know he's loved. And she said, you know, it's Guatemala. We'll figure out how we get the registrations done. There's no birth certificate, but that doesn't always matter here. We'll take care of it. So that's story number one. The second story is of a young man who I began to get phone calls from a few weeks ago. I had a listing for him because someone had mentioned him as a photographer. Too long a story to tell you the whole thing, except that I was busy with a group from Vancouver, Washington, and I hadn't got time to answer the phone. But I mean, every 5 minutes, the phone was ringing. This person clearly wanted to talk to me. And so I would just click it off and keep moving. At the end of the week, the group left, and Sunday night, the phone rings again. And I looked at it, and it's this guy, and I thought, well, you know, he's been calling insistently. I should make the effort and call him back and see what this is about. So I called him, and I said, I'm sorry that I have been ignoring you this week, but I've been busy, and I have you listed as Yeto the photographer. And he starts laughing. He goes, Yeto's my nickname, and I am a photographer. But my name is Hector Shep, and I am calling you because we have mutual friends. My hobby is bird watching. And he said, I'm a birder, and my friends have told me I should call you and we should get together. Well, they had mentioned Hector to me, and I'm going, oh, Hector, I'm so glad to hear from you. I didn't know it was you. Why don't you join me tomorrow morning on the balcony of the hotel, and we'll have breakfast together and get to know each other? And so he did. He came, and I said, you'll be my guest. And we went to that lovely spot that many of you know and had that lovely breakfast. And we're sitting there talking. And he said, well, how is it that you wind up in San Lucas Toliman? And I told him that I had worked with Habitat for many years and that I was still a volunteer. And the real reason I was in San Lucas Toliman was my little adopted family there, but here I am. And he beamed at me and he said, do you know where the first 5 Habitat houses in San Lucas Toliman are? And I said, no, actually I don't. And he said, well, I do, because I grew up in one of them. And then he began to tell me that all 5 of them were built for his extended family. In the days when the Habitat homeowners there had to make their own blocks in a machine, some of you will now be familiar with it because we're using it in making the stoves and the latrines. So if you haven't seen it yet, you will on your next visit. But he said, my family had to make those blocks for their house. And he said, when we were chosen, my mother was fatally ill and she could not do the work. And one of my aunts came to help. But she had these really long fingernails, and he said every time the block came up, you pull a lever and make the block, and then you take the lever the other direction, and the block rises out of the machine. And you're meant to take it very carefully because it's still wet and put it aside so that it can dry. And he said she couldn't catch that. And every time she dug those fingernails in, and the block crumbled right in front of everybody. And it took us a while to teach her how to do that. So that was kind of a fun story. And then he said, well, we moved into our house, and my mother didn't live very long after that. But I will always remember that she said to me, at least I got to live in a decent house in my lifetime. That's a powerful story. Now, the joy of it is, most of you don't know this, but Habitat for Humanity was named Habitat for Humanity because it's more than houses. Millard Fuller, the founder, used to say to me in those early days, we named it that because it's meant to be a decent house in a decent community for all of God's people. And that community is bigger than the neighborhood they live in. It's bigger than the town they live in. It's the world. And it includes taking care of the environment and having beautiful places to live. And the joy of Hector Shep is he is absolutely obsessed with birds. It's all he does now. Got to Ben last night, looked at my email, couldn't open it up because Hector had sent me so many pictures, it was overcrowded, of birds that he's seeing. He really is. He calls me every day and when I'm there, Marcos, guess what I've seen today, you know? And it's like, okay, tell me, you know? And we're trying to develop a large bird list to bring birding tourism. But he is a trained carpenter. He is also a trained elementary school teacher. And Hector's dream is to become a trainer of kids about the environment, about the birds, and also of the local farmers so they understand not to cut the trees and burn and all of this so that we have something to attract people and bring a whole new area of economic development to our communities. Imagine this. As I said to an audience the other day, we raised him. We brought him up in a habitat house. Well, we didn't physically do it, but it happened because of all of us. I remember once being at a luncheon in Americus, Georgia, with an older couple whose daughter I had known since college days. And in the South, any Southerners in here? In the South, if you grow up, you belong to the community. And so we were having lunch, and an executive from Habitat came over who hadn't been around long, and I introduced him to this couple. And he looked at them and said, how long have you known Clive? And the little lady looked up and said, known him? We raised him. And they hadn't literally, but you know, I had become part of that. So we raised Hector Shep in a habitat house. And now he stands for the very thing, that habitat that Millard talked about. So that's story number two. And the third story is of a volunteer who came a couple of weeks ago to build. His name is Dennis, and he's from Vancouver, Washington. Dennis came 2 years ago to build in San Marcos, another part of Guatemala. And the group was evenly divided between young people who had no idea what Kent State was, they didn't know much about Vietnam and the Vietnam War, and those of us who knew all too well what those things were. So at dinner, the table sort of sorted itself out. The young people are down there talking about the latest Beyonce hit or whatever young people talk about. And we were here talking about our common experiences. And a lot of tears got shed. Because when you get folks together of that experience, there is still a lot of pain. And all of a sudden, I looked up and I said, do you know what? I am sick and tired of weeping over Kent State. And I am sick and tired of weeping over Vietnam. It is time to look at what happens in our lives that we have done, the things that we're doing together now, and to realize that we create hope as we go along. More importantly, we have to realize that we got to live for those four young people that died at Kent State. We got to live for all our friends and relatives and young people who died in Vietnam and for all who died in Vietnam on every side. They never got to see their dreams come true. We did. And it's time to quit weeping and start celebrating. Tomorrow morning, I'm leading a devotion at a house site, and we're going to put an end to it. And so we went to this house site, and I said, now everybody pick up a stone. We're going to put them in the walls of this house. I do it with every house I touch in memory of Millard Fuller. And I said, but we're going to put our bad memories in here, and we're going to dedicate them to God, and we're going to move forward with our lives. And I was speaking, and we had to turn to the homeowner and ask for permission to do this. I said, we're about to put a lot of bad memories in your house and leave them here, and we want you to be aware of it and give us your permission, if you will, before we do it. And as we were saying that, a man got down, one of the masons got down, and he came over and he was weeping. And he said, are you aware what day this is today? Well, we were busy. We hadn't been paying attention. It was 9/11. And I said, and so much for that as well. No more weeping for 9/11. We move forward from here. And every mason on that site got down and got rocks and came and joined us. And the homeowner joined us. And we placed all those bad memories in holes in that house and we covered them up. And we walked away from that site. Dennis had been a medic in Vietnam with terrible memories. And he was a kind of a bitter guy. It was hard to have a conversation with him. He was very sarcastic and such. A few months later, I would see Dennis in Vancouver at a reunion dinner that we got together for. And he came and he sat next to me and he said, there's a Vietnam veterans build going to occur. And I'm thinking about going. And I said, no, Dennis, you are not thinking about going. You are going. This will be your healing moment. Dennis went on that build. And he was with us 2 weeks ago, and I am telling you, a transformed human being. No more bitterness, no more sarcasm, quite a different human being. And we began a house together. We didn't get much of it done. We're still digging the foundation, so we had to do all that stuff. And they didn't see it come out of the ground. But we got it started. And we had the other activity that people do. That was a week of latrines. They were building mostly latrines. But at the end of the week, there was going to be a smokeless stove built. You had one here in this place. I considered it one of the holiest sights I'd ever seen. What Barbara Brown Taylor would call an altar in the world. And there it was in this place. And Dennis got to go and build. He asked if he might go and build that stove. And the reason he wanted to have that experience is because he's going to Vietnam again. And he wants to take that technology to Vietnam and say, look what they're doing in Guatemala. Look how they're helping poor people there. And to be able to explain to them that 10 diseases are avoided by that. Cataracts for the women. Lung diseases for all the family. Wonderful ways to block that. And when we do a complete healthy house kit, as we call it, the latrine, the stove, and the water filter, 30 diseases are blocked from those lives, 30 very real diseases. And so Dennis wanted to do the stove. And while he was out doing the stove, I got on the phone and called the local Habitat office. Some of you have been there. And I said to the team, I said, get me a set of the plans and bring them here to the house dedication this afternoon. And they brought them to me, and I was able to hand Dennis those plans and say, in the name of the Great Commission, go. Go and take these plans. And may God bless you, and may this new technology help again to build for the people of Vietnam a temple of God's presence. Now, if there is the command to go, and we go into all the world by going to San Lucas Toliman, today's scripture is also an invitation. Come. Come yourselves and be built into the temple of God. And I have a challenge for you. Because when you went out originally, there were plans that this would be a relationship building opportunity. The truth is, when you're there for a week and maybe you don't speak Spanish, there's not a lot of relationship built with the family. Sometimes we don't even get to see the family that often because they're working and they're not there doing sweat equity side by side with us. So the truth is, the real relationship is built between members of this congregation. And I hope this church experiences the power of that. Those of you who have gone together, we actually have one real relationship back here that got help to be built on a site in San Lucas Toliman, Dick and Polly, as they made ribs together. I know that was already on before you came, but I think those ribs strengthened it. But relationships have been built in this congregation. But my question to you is there yet a Spanish congregation of this church? Not yet. Are you engaged with a Presbyterian Spanish congregation anywhere in Bend? The people are here. Are any of you mentoring a Spanish speaker, particularly a Guatemalan? Are you mentoring someone in how to become an American citizen? Even without mentioning the political nature of it, during the one convention, you saw an old man reach in his pocket and take out the Constitution. I loved hearing this by somebody saying he loved his country so much that he carries with him in his pocket every day a copy of the Constitution. Underwritten, circled, written in with notes so that he can refer to it. I won't ask you how many of you have one of those little pocket New Testaments on you today. Some of us are of an age, especially soldiers, to remember when they handed them to us. And there are marvelous stories of soldiers whose lives were saved because they had that Bible there and it stopped the bullet or it slowed the bullet. You don't see those very much anymore. You got to go in used shops to find them now. But how many of us love our Bible so much and love our faith so much and love our Christ and our God so much that we carry the word with us, ready to speak it at all times? Not most of us don't do that. It's something we need to be challenged to do. And we need to find our Hispanic neighbors and reach out to them. And I hope, dear God, that we do not find ourselves in a few months opening the doors of our churches as sanctuary and inviting people who are persecuted to come in as they were during the civil wars in Central America. But we need to be prepared for that. And we need to prepare our hearts for that, to be that living presence of God in our communities. Need to be building walls of welcome. So you have those opportunities when you come home to develop those relationships. You have the opportunity to build real walls of welcome here in Bend, because don't forget, you have an affiliate here. And there should be a natural tie between your trips to San Lucas and your trips across town to help build in this community. One final thought on that. I have an Ethiopian restaurant that I love in Atlanta to go to have dinner, and I've been there several times with friends. One of those friends is a man who lives in San Lucas Toliman. He's Guatemalan-American and has the wonderfully American name of John Adams. And I took John Adams to the restaurant once to have lunch. And, you know, you eat Ethiopian food with your fingers. So after we finished eating, I got up to go and wash my hands. And when I came back, I couldn't find John. And I thought, where's he gone? It's a tiny little place. And I looked at the Ethiopians and said, where's my dinner mate? They pointed to the kitchen. And I walked into the kitchen, and what did I find? John speaking in Spanish to a Guatemalan prep chef who worked in that kitchen. If John can walk into a restaurant and find the Guatemalans, you can find them in Bend. And I challenge you to do so. I challenge you to reach out and welcome them and say to them, you don't have a church? Or do you know about our faith? Our way of worshiping God? Come and be a part of our congregation. Oh, it doesn't work for you because you don't speak that much English? Well, maybe we could create a Presbyterian congregation at Bend First Presbyterian. Or if there exists another such congregation, we'll start working with it. The opportunities are tremendous for you to have the relationship part that we promised you. So my friends, come to San Lucas Toliman. There are many of you in this room I've never seen there. There are quite a few of you that I have. I invite you to come, but I also invite you to come yourselves as living stones and be built in the temple of God here in Bend, Oregon. Amen.